Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Songwriters on Process podcast. My name is Benno Papari, and since 2010, I've run the Songwriters on Process website, where you can find more than 200 conversations with songwriters about the creative process. I'm not here to talk about tour stories, band drama, how a band got its name, or favorite foods. My goal is to treat songwriters as writers, plain and simple. This is an intelligent conversation about the writing process between two writers. And today's interview is with The Lone Bellow. So this is a first for the Songwriters on Process website. Forget podcast, the entire website. And I've done, 300 plus interviews at this point. This is the first time I've interviewed all three or all of the artists in a band at the same time. I think I've done, actually, I don't know if I've done, I'm sure I've done more than one at a time, but never all of them, all three. So you have all three members of The Lone Bellow on this podcast. We have Zach Williams, Kaneen Pipkin, and Brian Elmquist all talking to me from three different locations. Just as a little logistics, Zach was outside, sounds like he was with his family. So there's the occasional sound of, I think, kids in the background. That's what you're going to hear. And when you have three people talking in three different locations, when one talks of the other, there's a gap. So you may hear, I had to cut out some audio from the original interview because it was just too hard to hear people, but just be aware of that when you listen. The Lone Bellow has a new album out called Love Songs for Losers. And a couple of things just that struck me here that, after talking to them, you know, my last interview was with Ali and AJ, and they are sisters in their band, and their processes were identical almost. I don't think there are many things they did that were different. Not the same with The Lone Bellow. Really, in a lot of places, they would do things differently on their own, and then when they come together, of course, we really talked. Not collectively how they write, but individually what each of their processes are. And a couple of similarities. They all read pretty voraciously, but as far as when they write, how they write, whether it's computer or pen and paper, there's a lot of differences. And I thought that was interesting to hear them talk about. And if you listen to them, they've never talked about this. Maybe they have, but I think one of them mentions at some point that they enjoyed hearing how the other one writes because they didn't know that about the other. So they were hearing things for the first time about what, how the others wrote, but there are things that they do differently. So I thought that was unique to hear, fun to hear, to talk about. As you'll also hear, so many of the ideas come to them when they are not writing songs, when they are doing things that don't involve songwriting at all. That's when the ideas come to them. They have kids, and so kids, obviously having a family affects the process. You don't have the luxury of time like you do when you don't have kids or don't have. So there's a lot of things going on here, but we did have a great conversation. Kaneen is a linguistics major, was a linguistics major, studied linguistics in college. And my PhD is in English literature. I took a few linguistics classes, but hearing her talk about the impact that linguistics has in her songwriting process, I loved that. So I enjoyed this. We had a blast talking. This was a lot of fun. So with that, here is my interview with The Lone Bellow. Well, let's officially get started. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me. So, I guess Zach, we'll start with you and then I'll just kind of go down the line, but I'm interested, I don't know if you saw that Bruce Springsteen interview with Howard Stern a few weeks ago, and Howard Stern asked him if he writes every day, and Bruce Springsteen said, no, because it's not every day that I have something to say. And he said, and that really surprised me because I thought, well, certainly Bruce writes every day. And he said, no, sometimes I have nothing to say, so I don't write. I just found that to be fascinating because that's not the response I expected. So Zach, we'll start with you. Like, how important is it for you to write in some fashion every day, whether it's songwriting or anything like that. Is that important? Or if you have nothing to say, why force it?
Yeah, I don't write every day. I've thought about like trying that out someday, but I have a kind of funny way. Sorry, this dumbass is following me and talking on the phone really loud. I'll write a song about her. let's see here. Yeah, I don't write every day, and I'm definitely a wait for it to come, don't want to force it kind of thing. I've tried forcing it before, and I usually end up writing something that I forget about within a week or two. I think the activity of like journaling is really important, and just like, you know, meditating, praying, whatever you want to call it. I think it's a really important part of just like being a human. But as for like purposefully trying to write a song, I keep that in a place where it just like, when it wants to come out, it comes out, kind of thing.
Yeah. How about you, Brian? Is it important to create every day regardless or no?
I mean, I just created outside with my blower, you know, like that was really fun. I'm with Zach on this. I will write down notes to myself, take voice memos, but writing music is more of a seasonal thing to me. Like there's a time when it's really fertile and there's a time when you've said everything and you need to just stop. Being creative, however you can take your brain to that like place, like me putting in headphones with a blower, I think that's very important every day. The same thing he's saying about meditation, that thing that just gets your brain to where you're not really thinking about anything really helps to, I don't know, it helps me to just like find what I want to say. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kanine, how about you?
Yeah, I'm not to be redundant, but I also feel the same way. I try to do a lot of like daily practices and definitely take notes. And for me, listening to music and feeding my just pure enjoyment of listening to music is really important. And I feel like if I'm at a place where all music is not really speaking to me, I know I need to like stop writing for a minute and just like try to get back to the basics of like, why do you even do this? I feel like if you don't enjoy listening to music, then writing is like being in a conversation and you're not listening to the other person. You're just trying to like figure out when their mouth is going to stop moving so you can also say something.
Right.
And I never want to get to that place where I'm just like, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, I feel like I want to plumb the depths of, you know, whatever is going on. And I do that through like, I do yoga pretty much every day, try to go on walks every day and develop some silence and yeah, keep that muscle of just like enjoying music very healthy.
Okay, so I have a lot of follow-ups. So the first one is very practical. Kanine, we'll stick with you and I'll just go down the line. But
sure.
The voice memos. I hear this all the time from songwriters. It makes me very anxious because I imagine thousands of voice memos in a phone with no sense of organization. And, you know, and I'm like, how do you go back to that one 6 months ago? Is there any, practically, is there any organization can need at all with those voice memos or no?
Usually, you can usually tell by looking at them how long they are. If you're going into like a co-write or something, those are fun times to kind of go through and just see if there's any little gems hidden. But it can get a little bit chaotic for sure.
Yeah. I
try to keep them titled at least, but
I do hear that. The titles do help. But Brian, how about you? Is there any organization to those memos at all?
No, it's all madness.
Do you like that or no?
The shock.
I mean, for me, it's more like if the song's supposed to happen, it's going to happen. And then I'm on a plane and I'm going through all these voice memos and I'm like, holy, that's cool. And then I name it and I come back. But it's pure madness right now. I haven't been going. I'm not even trying to like compartmentalize anything. It's just like all just out there on a couple different notes and voice memos. But I mean, that's just my, you know, the way I do it.
Yeah.
But it's if I look at it, if I, when you said, when you made me think about it just then, it actually made me a little bit nervous.
I do. Yeah. It's very rare, but I hear people say like, if it's not, if they give it a title, if it's important or if it is really good, they'll know where it was in the first place. But I can just imagine this, the endless scroll to go, where is that one that I did that I forgot, you know, where I, you know, where
you actually, you're actually making me want to go weed a little bit.
So I did interview BJ Barm of American Aquarium a couple of years ago, and he told me he has an 80-page single spaced Word document of all it's emotions organized by topic. So like sad relationship, happy relationship. And he's got an endless, it's a Word document he's always adding to. And you know, I could tell you stories about songwriters who do actually, are incredibly organized. I think, yeah, most of them aren't, but Zach, where do you fall in that? Are you organized or not organized with those voice memos?
It takes a lot for me to want to make a voice memo. So I don't have that many. I probably have like 80 total in my phone.
So
it stays in my head quite a bit.
Yeah. Okay. So the silence element, because two of you mentioned this, and I've started to hear this, you know, I interviewed Tim Burgess of the Charlatans a few weeks ago, and he talked about how meditation is a very important part of his process. And I asked him, I said, you know, when you're meditating, what do you do in those moments of silence, if an idea comes to you, to continue with the meditation, or do you actually stop and then write those ideas down? So Kanina, I know you said you do yoga, and I think one of you mentioned the word silence, but Kanina, I'm curious, are you know, during those moments of silence, is the silence meant to kind of be a creative place, or a place to kind of empty your brain when you don't let those ideas in, if that makes sense?
I think it's a more of a place to be in an observatory state of mind. So I'm not judging any of the thoughts or ideas I have. They come. I just like let them float by like a cloud. I'm not like going to obsess over it. And then it just comes and it goes. Whereas if I'm running is a very different, if I get an idea when I'm running, I can like kind of flesh it out and I'll like be running and kind of singing or running. And, you know, those voice memos are terrible because they're just like, but there is a dedicated time. I think meditation and yoga is to empty your brain. And if things do come, you can observe them without any judgment, basically. So I wouldn't say I don't get ideas there, but I don't go there for ideas.
Yeah. Zach, how about you? Is that because I think you mentioned meditation. So is that something you do, and do ideas ever happen when you're meditating?
No, I definitely don't meditate.
I thought you said you did. I apologize.
I want to. Yeah, but I don't have time right now. I mean, like where I'm at, like I haven't written a song in a year and a half. And I think that used to scare me, and it doesn't really scare me anymore. I'm at a place in my life right now where, like, I don't want to force it. And sometimes I get like freaked out, and I'm like, "Whoa, have I written my last song?" But that kind of happens to me every time I write a song. I get this like thing. But yeah, I run. And I walk the dog, but I don't like, you know, sit crisscross applesauce and stare at the floor. I wish I did.
Well, I want to mention movement, Brian, and I want to talk to all three of you about this because, and Brian, you mentioned the blower, the leaf blower. So yeah. I hear this all the time from songwriters about the role of mundane activities and how mundane activities, inspire creative element because, and I've never heard leaf blowing, but I've heard gardening. I've heard washing the dishes. I've heard chopping vegetables. I hear vacuuming. I hear folding clothes, doing laundry, cleaning, anything that requires you to turn off your brain. I do hear that, like some kind of repetitive activity that requires no thought whatsoever is a very fruitful time. And I think especially not to make this a Corona question, but during the pandemic, when people are inside, they're maybe doing a lot more of those things. So, but I do hear that all the time as far as that the repetitive movements, because I think it allows your kind of subconscious to kind of filter up. So do you get a lot of ideas during that time, Brian?
I would say, I mean, it's a bigger question for me, honestly, because I'm trying to like kind of not think about myself and remove myself out of the middle of it. And the only time I can like actually plow the ground in my brain is when I can like shut it off and like not, because like everything we do, touring and all, it revolves around us, and it kind of makes me sick to my stomach. Like, so in a grand scheme, I'm just trying to clear my brain so I can like just till the ground, not really there's not a reason for doing that. Because like songwriting isn't it's what I like to do. It's not like my identity. But I do want to like, if I can clear the space there, I can actually be ready to receive whatever, when I'm ready to write, and go back and dig in, or I'm with a friend and they're trying to write songs for what they're trying to do or however it comes. But, basically the whole process is like me getting out of the way of myself. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. At least in the last couple of years,
Yeah. But not that you use those, but it sounds like, I guess not that you use that repetitive motion, but do you find that when you're doing those things, when your mind isn't thinking about anything, do ideas ever come to you when you're doing those moments?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Sure. And those are the times that I just like stop what I'm doing, put it down and move on,
Yeah.
If it's worth it. But like I don't do those things for the result of it. And I think that's important to me. Just like grandiose, like 30,000 foot view and as a songwriter, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, I think I took it to more of a meta than what we were really talking about, but that's kind of how my brain thinks about it.
Yeah, no, but you'd be surprised, though. Maybe you wouldn't, but you'd be surprised often I hear songwriters tell me, I had this great idea literally when I was vacuuming, when I'm doing something that requires no thought. It's something I've done so often. And I hear that a lot when it comes to those, just because your brain doesn't have to focus on that thing at all. And it can go to those places.
Well, there's so much. Sorry, Zach, go ahead.
Yeah, Zach, go ahead.
My best ideas usually come when I'm like needed somewhere else. And it's like, what are you doing? We have to go. And I'm like, this is happening now. Sorry.
I feel like
there's like a rebellious spirit like deep in there somewhere, where it's like when you're needed over and over and over, I don't know, somewhere way down in there, it's like a kickback. And that's, I get hit with ideas a lot when I shouldn't be thinking about songwriting, which is just a funny little thing that just makes you feel like a little out of control.
Hmm. Yeah, Kenny, what were you going to say? I think you were going to say something.
Oh, no, Zach sends us almost every like song idea he sends us, his kids are all like screaming in the background. I don't know how you do it, man. It's insane.
I'm pinching them while I'm doing it.
My favorite story is like, what song was it? Your wife said it and like you said the line to you and you're like, no, I'm sorry. What was it?
Oh yeah, she was like, "Come break my heart again." And I was like, wait. She was like, "You are not. We're gonna work this out. You are not gonna start writing a song right now." And I was just like, "This is more important than me."
So I tell the story all the time when songwriters mention the role of movement, because I'm a big runner. And I wrote an article about this in the Washington Post about 5 years ago, about the very clear link between aerobic exercise and creativity. So there's a very clear link that's been replicated in the labs. So let me tell you how this works, because it's not snake oil science. What they've done is they put people on a treadmill for 20 minutes at about 60% max heart rate, which is not much more than a moderate walk. And then after those 20 minutes, administered a battery of tests. And those people always score higher than people who weren't exercising on these tests measuring executive function and higher order thinking. And there's a chemical in the brain called brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDNF, that gets secreted only through exercise. And that's through increased blood flow, which is exercise. So the sweet spot is about 90 minutes post exercise, we're at our creative peak, and then the effect kind of trails off. So the ideal is 30 minutes at 60% max heart rate, and it's not dose responsive. So 60 minutes isn't twice as good as 30 minutes. And 90% max heart rate isn't much better than 60%. And 60% is not much more than a moderate walk. So when we get, and I get so many ideas when I'm running and afterwards, and I know that as a writer. So after I go run, like I ran this morning, I swear to God, I came upstairs and I started to do stuff because I knew this was my time. So there's research behind that. This is not just like, oh, I get ideas when I run. Why is that? So there's a very clear it's a very clear relationship. And one more thing, and that is that you've got to be doing things that don't require executive function as you exercise. So for example, running in an urban environment isn't effective as a natural environment, because you're running in an urban environment, you're trying not to get, hit by cars. So anyway, there's a very practical reason for why this happens. So Kaneen, with all that being said, Kaneen, I know you mentioned running. So now that you know that,
I definitely, I always feel like I need to exercise, even if it's just walking the dog or whatever, every day, just to like get to a brain functioning level. So all of this, the BDNF makes a lot of sense. And to me, it's not about like being disciplined or anything. I'm just like, I need to get there. I just like, I don't feel like I can do what I want to be doing. So that definitely makes a lot of sense for me. And yeah, I do think, I think it correlates with that thought of like the runner's high when you're a few miles in and then suddenly just all that thought, your body is warm and you just enter into this place of neutrality in your mind, which to me is a really fertile ground for ideas and good thinking in general. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for me, like I said, I use it as a part of my, that like I especially like maybe early afternoon when we tend to kind of, founder anyway, attention wise, that's when I go. And it's pretty, I don't know. I mean, I do use that deliberately, especially if I'm in a rut, I'll go for a walk and I feel like that stuff shakes out as I walk. So, Brian, yeah. Do you ever use that as a part, intentionally or unintentionally?
It's not an intentional thing. Exercise has always been just like to make the demons quiet. Taking the demons quiet helps me to like write a song. I'm sure it does. I've never really put it in that. I just enjoy like the empty brain I get after I run or ride the bike. I like to ride a bike a lot. But yeah, I think for sure. I mean, anything that, like I said, anything that helps you get out of the way of yourself, to be able to find something that needs to be said, and exercise has to, because it gets everything working like as it should,
Zach, how about you? I know you mentioned walking and things. So do you ever make that a part of your process at all? Do ideas come to you in those moments?
Yeah, for sure. I think some of my favorite, even just memories, are during a run. you know, you just, the kind of memories that just stick with you forever. It'll just be like this random moment, 25 minutes in on a run. I think it's so important for me to do it. And I'm about at the place where I actually want to start cycling instead pretty soon, just because of my body. But I'm wondering if cycling will do the same thing as running. I think it will. But yeah, I really get what you say about running in cities versus running like in the wide open.
Yeah.
Cause when we're on tour, I run in cities a lot, and I'll just be like making sure I'm not going to like step on a heroin needle or something. Whereas like when you're running in the woods, you can just like lose yourself and you're not worried about getting hit by a car or, you know, whatever, just all the random crap that happens in cities. I always accidentally run the wrong way in cities. So I've, you know, I end up like getting chased by pit bulls and stuff. But yeah, it definitely helps clear, not just clear your head, but yeah, like kind of like get you to the place where you actually should probably be.
Yeah. That's right. That's a good way to do it. Yeah. Someone told me that recently. They don't use it as a way to get ideas. They use it as a way to clear their head. So the ideas come later on. So let's talk about the ritual. I love to read interviews with writers about the ritual, the writing ritual, you know, time of day, place, things they have to have with them. Like for me, one of my big quirks is I write here, but I revise in that chair behind me because I find that writing and revising has to take place in a different space. I need distance from the writing process when I revise. So I know that about myself. And so I will take pains to do that. Brian, how about you then? How important is that ritual to your process? If it is?
Well, I mean, I actually enjoy, if I'm like working with artists or something, I like the time around 10 to like 1.
AM to PM.
AM. I don't do the other thing. I actually think that's a cop out for people who have to work in the middle of the night.
Ooh.
I think, you know, there's no way you can be creative. I think it's just for me, at least. The most creative is like when your brain's actually going, like work. I don't know. Maybe this is nice to be at the end of yourself too. Anyway, I'm rambling. I think like that kind of time space, but also like I spent like 2 years writing in the church. And I really like that, but the ritual is not as important as actually like having the people around that just know like how you operate. Like, I don't like to edit anything until I like to like get everything out and then let it be and then come back to it. I the editing in the middle of the process is probably like for me, like is hard because you're actually getting in the way of whatever. You just got to let it out and then edit. So the ritual is not as important as just not editing yourself until you've got the whole idea out and then going back and edit it. Cause you might have two or three songs right there. You might have nothing. It might be crap, but it's very important to just have the space to like just let it all come out, you know.
There's a great essay by the novelist Anne Lamott called it's from her book called Bird by Bird, but the essay is called Shitty First Drafts. And I couldn't agree with you more. And I tell, you know, writers, or I tell our daughter is a freshman at University of Georgia, and she loves to read, loves to write. And I told her, you know, I'm very cautious about telling people how they should create, but the only thing, no writer will ever tell you, revise as you write. I mean, it's, you know, for two reasons. One, as you just said, you know, you got to get out of the way when you're in that creative space, but it just takes longer. And how do you know, you know, how do you know as you're writing, how do you know how it's going to end up at the end? And I don't know, people who revise as they write, they've never once said, I revise as I write and I love it. It's always, I revise as I write. Oh my God, please help me stop. because it really makes things a lot longer, and that take a lot longer. So I agree with you 100% that just getting out of the way, and I'm a big proponent of that shitty first drafts idea.
There's a couple songs that make this last record that we just did that were like thrown out, came back up. It's just like a song wants to be sung. So you're right. Me and Zach wrote this song called Dreaming, like in California, like 8 years ago. And then it came back and we never could make it work. And then all of a sudden it worked.
Yeah.
So like, everything's not supposed to happen in a 6 month period or a year period. Just hopefully there's enough going on where you can make something happen. But like every song's not supposed to be done like in a day. That's crazy. These people in Nashville, like I work with them and they're like just pumping, and it's like, it's just, I don't know. It's just like, you need to give the song the space to see it, because you hear the song come out and then it's like, and then you listen to it once, like, oh, that was nice. And it moves on, because the craft of it they haven't really gotten the craft of it. But that's just my opinion. It's my opinion's worth crap, you know?
Well, I was going to say, I agree 100%. I mean, distance, I use distance all the time. I mean, the worst time to revise is when I've just revised or just written. And I'm amazed. It's funny, because I never look back at these things with distance and go, oh my gosh, that's amazing. It's always, oh my God, I can't believe I wrote that. I wish I, you know, that's always the kind of what I think to myself, but I'm just amazed what one night's sleep does. Mm-hmm. Like if I write at 8 a.m. and then revise at 8 p.m, that's not as effective as writing at eight at night and then revising 12 hours later after I slept. I don't know what it is. There's something about that sleep when I get up, and it's much the clarity and my ability to delete things and get rid of stuff is much more effective with one night's sleep with that distance.
I also like will take a song that I think's finished and bring it to a write and see if they change it. Because you never know, like my perspective is just, I'm just looking at the world one way, you know, somebody might have a bet. And then if they don't do it, I'll pull it back, you know, but you know, stuff like that. I think it's healthy not to hold it too precious.
Yeah, definitely. Kaneen, so before I ask you about your ritual, I guess, are you a pen and paper person or a computer person when it comes to lyrics?
Usually pen and paper, sometimes notes on my phone for lyrics, but I like writing. Like writing leads to a much more like visual concept. I'm like a big doodler. It's just always been something that I need to do. And that can help kind of get some nonverbal things out on the page, but I definitely like to, I mean, I just write a lot of my lyrics in my head, but I like pen and paper.
Okay, so I could do an entire website dedicated just to the color of ink, the brand of pen, and the type of paper that songwriters like. Some of you might disagree, but very few songwriters say, oh, it doesn't matter. You know, it's got to be black, got to be blue, got to be this kind of pen, got to be this kind of paper. So does that matter to you at all?
I definitely have a preference for the Sharpie pens that have
the permanent ones.
They're not like, not the markers, but the ultra fine Sharpie pens. They write very well. And just like a college ruled single space journal.
I do think there's research that says it's a different part of the brain using pen and paper than using computer. I think I've read things like that. I could be wrong, but I think there's reason behind why that's more effective.
I believe it.
Yeah. Okay. So back to that ritual then, Kaneen, does time of day, place, do you have a special room or anything like that? Or does that not matter?
It doesn't matter that much. I think for both the guys too, it's like, we've spent the last, 10 odd years on the road, and you kind of write wherever you can, whenever you can. I definitely enjoy, like if I'm going to a co-write and trying to get in that vein, I like to clean my house and I'll do dishes or something. And then I'm just like letting, I'll let my brain just like, now is the time to like entertain some ideas, and I'll just sing out loud. So if I can be by myself, that's kind of crucial. Those moments leading up, I like to just, you know, I'm reading that Stephen King book on writing right now.
Yeah.
I love how he says, write with the door closed and edit with the door open. And I think that's kind of what Brian was saying too. It's like, write and get all the ideas out and make sure you don't cannibalize them before they're ready to, you know, go up against the editing brain or like a co-writer or whatever.
Well, Hemingway did say write drunk, edit sober.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's another thing altogether, but I was nodding because I wish I could remember the names of the songwriters who tell me that cleaning the house is a very important part of the routine. Like literally, specifically, they clean the house, clean the office, clean the room, and only then.
I don't know if it's it's hard for me. If I'm writing at home, things need to be like a certain, they need to be clean. Yeah. Otherwise, I can't get to it.
That's so fascinating because I've heard that before. Brian, so pen and paper, are you a pen and paper or a computer person?
I like both. It depends. Sometimes I'll have the pen and paper. I have a little satchel I take with me. So I have the pen and paper and I'll have just my phone because I just use notes. And like if the notes aren't working, I'll pull out the pen and paper, start like writing. I find like sometimes if you just start like, I think Zach maybe taught me this, but you just like start writing on a piece of paper and all of a sudden you kind of start getting ideas. I think that's something Zach did. And I tried that and that always works for some reason. Like if you're in the middle of like, I don't know, it's a crazy thing, but yeah, I try to do both. I try to carry them around and just, you know, carrying a guitar that has a different tuning or something like that. Just to change your the way you're looking at it, you know?
Yeah. Zach, how about you? Pen and paper, computer, phone? Does it matter?
Yeah, definitely. Pencil and paper for me.
Pencil.
Yeah, I'm left-handed, and pens dig the wrong way when I'm writing. Like I'm going against paper instead of with it, you know, because you write left to right. I love being able to have an eraser.
So eraser, that's interesting because pens let you cross out, but maybe still see what was there if you want to go back to it, but you prefer just to erase it entirely.
Yeah. I think I'm probably, a little more visual where like I need to like completely forget about something just like while I'm writing. If I write something down, I don't know, there's just some part of me that needs to completely erase it and then write the next thing. And then if that original idea was good, then it'll naturally come back to me and I wouldn't even needed to write it down. Now, I gotta say, it's so inspiring just like hearing your process. It's like, it's really something.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, thanks. I mean, I guess for me, it's I just know what works. And again, I'm not a songwriter, I'm a prose writer, so mine's different. But I do feel like Brian, you said, I mean, I'm the same way. Like I'm a morning person. I don't understand how people can, at some point, my brain just turns off. I can't function after a certain time. I've never understood that, but I hear some songwriters say they write till 4 a.m. I don't get it, but some of them do, and that works for them. But for me, it's always, you know, and again, I don't tour, so it's different. I do have the luxury of kind of being in the same place. But for me, it's just, if I know what works, that's the confidence of knowing, okay, it's been work there before. Like when I'm in a rut, when things aren't happening for me here at this desk, I go downstairs to another room. I just know that I can't stay in the same place. And it's pretty amazing what that does for me. Just how moving to another location gives me ideas.
So, if I'm in right and I'm stuck, I just like get up and leave the room for like 5 minutes. And then I can just be in a different place and like by myself for a minute. It gets that kink out and then I can come back and I'll yeah, that helps a lot.
Yeah. Ryan, how about you? You were kind of nodding, I think, but are there, does anything work for you when you're in a rut?
I mean, you're speaking to the choir. Like I don't even, I'll change the seat. I mean, I'd just be sitting on one side of the couch, go to another side of the couch. I'll go to another chair in the room. I'll go sit at the piano, or it's just like, it's so funny because all this stuff is just trying to give you another glimpse of what you're actually trying. And you're looking into like the ether, but you're just changing your spot where you're, you know what I mean? So it's a funny thing, but all of us are saying the same thing. It's just a really fun. I've never really like talked about the actual like process of it. It's really fun to hear yours and actually Canine and Zach's, because I haven't heard in a while, you know.
The extreme version of that is I read this study in Nature magazine a couple of years ago about Salvador Dali, and he has this ritual, and it's actually, they've actually replicated this in a lab. And I always forget during these interviews what the name of this state is, but there's a state in our minds just before sleep. So we're not fully asleep, but we're not awake. You know, it's that haze that you're in when you're kind of just there. And there is actually a name for this, but what he would do, Salvador Dali would do, there's a picture of him. He would sit in this incredibly uncomfortable chair with a skeleton key in his hand and his arm outstretched and a saucer on the floor. And when he drifted off, you know, he'd loosen his grip, the key would fall, it would make a loud noise, it would wake him up, and he'd go to paint. And I just find that, and there is a name for this. Like I said, it's been kind of replicated. With other creatives, that there's that, it's that kind of moment when we're not sleeping, but we have those weird words and
didn't Einstein do that too? Or, was it Ben Franklin?
Oh, I don't know.
Like the same thing. They would like lay down and have something as soon as it, like that was when they wake up and they work.
Yeah.
Funny thing.
Yeah. I know, Brian, but has that ever happened? Like, do you ever get those ideas and those just kind of, I don't know what the state is called, but
this is the state we're talking about. This is the state I've been talking about since the beginning, the blower. Maybe I played football, so I have soft brain, so I kind of have that state for it. But like sometimes I know exactly what you're saying. You know, Soul, the movie, the Disney movie Soul, which is, yeah. I love that movie.
Great movie.
That does a great job of representing what we're talking about, because you literally go to another plane in your brain, and that's the creative, like whatever they called it there, but that's what you're talking about. And I mean, it's that subconscious place is such a, you know, that's the fertile ground we're talking about. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Canine, ever happened to you? Have you ever had ideas in that, whatever that state is that we're trying to pinpoint?
It's like the liminal space, you know, like space between worlds. Yes, it's actually super annoying because I almost always get ideas when I am almost asleep, like going to bed. And it's always the nightly struggle of like, do I just not sleep and wake up and write it down? I've written like songs, like an entire chorus, like in my sleep, and I'll like wake up. I guess it's like during some sort of the brain cycle, I wake up and just do the whole thing. Sometimes it's trash and sometimes it, like finished a couple songs, recorded a couple that have been written that way. So
yeah,
I think so much a part of just getting out, like everything we're saying, it's like getting out of your own way. Mm-hmm. And why there are so many layers in your brain. I went through a period where I was doing artist pages, like did the artist way and did that like free writing exercise every morning. And man, I felt like I unearthed so many things, because I just, after you write three pages every morning of just like your initial thoughts, you've cleared all these cobwebs and you're like getting to the deep cleaning of all of these things that you've held onto that you're not even really aware of, that have been clouding some things. So I do think seasons of doing that have been really helpful for me. It's hard to do when, you know, we all have kids and our time is contested, but I do feel like it's always a really fruitful practice.
Yeah. Zach, how about you? Do you ever have those moments when you're just on that verge of sleep and melody or something comes to you?
Yeah, there's a song on our latest album that I wrote basically just in the middle of the night called Homesick. And it was like the chorus would not let me go back to sleep. I had to go downstairs and write the song to go to sleep. I feel like those songs are always just like great. I love those little gifts. I don't like them when they're happening. I'm super frustrated, right? But you look back and you're like, man, that's some good stuff right there.
So those middle of the night ideas, are you less likely to edit those and revise those because of that space they emerged from in your brain?
They're just more likely to even make it to the editing phase.
Ah, okay. Hemingway, speaking of Hemingway, he said all writers should go to art galleries. And so, I'm a big fan. And I do find that songwriters tend to be voracious readers. So I'm curious, I always end these interviews with discussions of reading habits of people, how much they read or if they do read, who their favorite authors are. So how much is reading a part of your creative process?
I really love to read. It's I have the kind of brain where once I start reading a book, I start thinking in the voice of the author, and it kind of takes over my whole psyche. Like I will and have and will again just stay up till like 4 a.m. to finish a book. Like I am a little bit of like, once I get in there, I don't want to leave. So I have to be careful about the length of books I choose and when I read them, but it's definitely helpful, I think, because it is that immersive experience into somebody else's brain and language and how they choose to write things. And that's something that's always, I was a linguistics major. And so just like the way people talk and how they choose to, you know, everything about expression has always been so interesting to me. So reading is a really good way. If I feel stuck and I'm just saying everything the same way over and over again, that's really, and listening to music as well, listening to other, getting back to that, like listening to other writers with music, it's endlessly inspiring.
So do you, a couple of things, are you a, cause I'm not an author, an author reader. In other words, like when I read an author, my first, and I'm done with that book, my first instinct is no, let me read everything else by that author. It's let me get another voice in my head that's a different kind of style. Like that's just me. Like I'm not the kind of person that says I'm going to read everything by this author. I love different voices. So where do you fall in that? Are you like, I've got to read everything by someone, or do you kind of like a variety?
I like a variety for sure. I think the worst is when like you love one book by somebody and then you read it and you're like, ugh. Yeah. But also really encouraging because it's like, you know, you can listen to a great Beatles record. Like listening to the White Album is one of my favorite records because there's so much, you know, classic material in there. And then there's so much just like random, like could have probably been edited out, but I'm so glad they didn't because you get to see so much of the process, which is fun.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I like, you know, I like reading a wide variety of authors for sure. I'll definitely, if I really liked the way somebody wrote, I'll try out their other books, but it's not like a necessity.
Do you have favorite authors that you do like or genres? Is there something you go towards?
Not really. It's just like good writing, I think. And if the writer has that power to kind of transport you and you want to live in their brain for a while, that's what gets me. It can be like a memoir, it can be historical fiction, it can, you know, whatever.
I'm just thinking about as a linguistics major, the impact that has on your this, like how sounds work in a song. I don't think I've ever interviewed a songwriter who's a linguistics major. I mean, I was lit. I took a couple of linguistics classes, but not specialty. Yeah. Wow. That's got to make it I don't know. I would imagine that having that knowledge of linguistics, how does that, I don't know. Does that affect your writing at all?
Yeah. I don't know if it's for better or for worse, but, I'm definitely thinking about the way that people like semantics, and just because it means something to me, it's going to mean something different to somebody else. And it's kind of a fun thing to play with. My favorite part was really phonetics and phonology. So the creation of sounds, and that leads to just me having a lot of really annoying vocal things that I do that the guys, you know, have to suffer through on the daily. So.
Amazing. My PhD is in 20th century American theater. So playwrights, that's Tennessee Williams behind me, and Eugene O'Neill and Sam Shepard are those posters behind me. So I was a play.
Sam Shepard, Zach.
Wait, is Zach a Sam? What's the Sam Shepard connection?
I just randomly made some Sam Shepard t-shirts for myself. I've just wanted Sam Shepard merch for a long time. I love the little bit that I've seen him, and and all of it. Yes, I'm a huge Sam Shepard fan.
So that poster behind me, that one I know you can't see it, Zach, but that poster behind me is, I got it off eBay. It's an original poster from it when Buried Child premiered off Broadway. And so that's an original, it's one of those things on eBay that you just dig up, and it's actually an original poster. And my plug for Sam Shepard is that, and he's written a Zach, they both were published after he died, I think, but two novels. And if you like his plays and the language, the novels are incredible, because it's the same symbolism, the same imagery, the same playful language, the same everything. Okay, Brian, sorry, back to you. Reading habits.
I wish I was a better reader. I have, I've left two lonesome doves at two separate houses that I was in. I was thinking about this and how I would answer it. I wish I was a better reader, but I do. The thing that really interests me, kind of like how you guys talk about reading, is hearing people's process of just how they think. And I listen to a lot of podcasts, and like, I just listened to one with Rick Rubin and how he thinks about things. And man, what a brain, it's so amazing. Not just read words people write, but actually get a glimpse in the way they their process. It's just, so I kind of get lost in that kind of loophole with the time that I could take. I went through a big Steinbeck phase, and then somebody wrote a movie called The Sun that was a lot like that. I really like that time period of, like, you know, maybe getting out of the Gilded Age, and a lot of people having, you know, fight for labor rights and stuff like that. So it really, anyway, that's my answer. I wish I was better. I wish I created more time for myself with that, but that's just what it is.
And that's it for the latest episode of Songwriters on Process. Don't forget, you can find all of my interviews with over 200 songwriters on my Songwriters on Process website at songwritersonprocess.com, going all the way back to 2010. You can read them, watch them, or listen to them. So until next time, thanks for listening.